Come on, people. It's time to live it up.
We'd tell them.
Hello, this is Tanya McKiernan. This is the director chair with Rosemary Rodriguez, but she is in New York working, so I am the co-host, Tanya McKiernan. And today, my special guests are Virgil Williams and Amelia Rose Blair.
Hi.
Virgil started on 24, then I worked with him on ER. Actually, we didn't work together, but we were on the softball team together. And then worked on Chicago Code, and then on Criminal Minds, which I've directed two episodes for him. And Amelia Rose Blair, I have, gosh, how many years has it been? Four, maybe? Worked with her on Perception, Royal Pains, Blue Bloods, and she just currently worked on Virgil's episode of Criminal Minds. So I thought that it would be a great idea to put the two of them together since they're both friends of mine and now they know each other.
Yes, we've all gotten to work together. It's been absolutely such a dream.
Yeah, and it's great too, especially because we, you know, it's called director's chair, but we like to, you know, it's great to talk to everybody in all aspects of television, and I love having a writer and an actress here that that have different experiences, and then me being a director, having worked with both of you is interesting. So, Virgil, why don't you tell me how you got onto 24.
Oh, man. I just was in the race. I had spec scripts and had just gotten an agent. And I actually got really lucky, you know, even though I really kind of believe that luck is when preparation meets opportunity. I was totally prepared for the opportunity. they read me and it was good enough to get a meeting. And we sat down and had a great meeting. Joel Cerno and Bob Cochran and I sat down and, you know, they must have seen something that they liked and they must have read something that they liked because they made the offer. And it was fantastic. I mean, that was a fantastic first job. Fantastic first job. Great guys. Great show. And it was a show that I targeted. You know, you look at all the pilots when you're jumping into staffing season, and I saw that pilot, and I looked at my, at the time, girlfriend, who was to become my fiance, who is now my wife, and I was like, well, that's my jam right there. And it worked. I finally sort of got in. I got in, you know, just was in the game.
What was it like the first day that you walked on the job?
God, man, you know, I wish that I could see what I must have looked like back then, you know, because I was probably, I'm quite sure I was bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. it was funny that day. Cerno his tennis balls in the room, footballs in the room, like, you know, he's throwing the ball across the table like he's that guy. And he goes, here's what we're doing. And the first thing that I did was I sat in a chair because Cerno was not in the room when I entered the room. And Cerno entered the room and he said, Virg, stand up for a second. And I stood up, and then he sat down in my chair because I was sitting in his chair. and then later on in the day, the game was, you know, someone tossed a tennis ball up in the air, and your job was to try and hit said tossed tennis ball out of the air with another tennis ball. Mm. And I did it on the first try, and I took that as some sort of divine sign that I was in the right place. I mean, you know, it was a cool little thing that's kind of stuck in my my memory of first day. And it was amazing because those guys were all brilliant. Those guys were all, you know, I was in my early 30s and those guys were all in their, you know, the youngest guy was maybe 42, 43. They'd all been executive producers at some point. They'd all had their own show at some point. And there was, you know, Howard Gordon was in that room. Bob Cochran is one of the smartest men I've ever met. Forget about just in the industry. He's just one of the smartest dudes I've ever met. He's one of those cats that can, like, quote poetry and stuff. Am I allowed to swear? Should I curtail that? He just quotes poetry and shit. Like, that's what I was going to say. I mean, he can pull, you know, he can pull quotes out of the air like that. Mm. And I remember thinking, I belonged there, but I remember thinking, I'm going to be good at this. I'm not good yet. I'm good enough to be here. I'm good enough to have my foot in the door for and them to show me what's up, to be at the table so that I can learn from these guys. I'd ascended to that, but those guys thought at a speed at which I couldn't do that yet. I was too new to the game.
They were taking you under their wing.
Yeah, there was a lot of that. There was a lot of that happened there. Thank God. So much so that, you know, after season two, you know, my agent at the time didn't think so, but they didn't ask me back. But they didn't ask me back. There was a reason for that. And one of the reasons that they wanted to promote someone else to staff writer. The other reason was that that show was top heavy. It was, about, like I said, a bunch of EPs, executive producers, and then me. And I was starting to cost real money. Another reason was that, you know, and Joel Cerno's words, he's like, dude, you got to go somewhere and be the guy. And you can't be that here because we're top heavy. The other thing is you're on a show, you know, we tell stories in real time. So we're backwards. Like, everything that we do here is backwards and counterintuitive and not the way that it rolls. And it's time for you to go be the guy on staff somewhere. And you have our full support now. Go swim. It was that kind of a deal. Mm. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe it. All that stuff. And, you know, and it felt bad at the time, but it was, I still look at it like it was a tough love, you know, whatever it was, if it was totally pragmatic on their part, if they hadn't, you know, whatever, you know.
But it's like you're the parent kicking the child out.
Yeah.
You know, you don't like it at the time, but you look back and you go, oh, you know what? Mm-hmm. That was the thing that should have happened.
Yeah.
You know? So Amelia, what was your first job? Like, your first big job?
My first job was on a Lifetime show called Drop Dead Diva. And
Josh Berman, love him.
It was so much fun. It was my first job. I got to go to Georgia, to Peachtree City. And I was playing a girl who was being bullied online. And I just remember being so, so, so nervous. And the director, I don't remember who he was, but he wasn't saying anything to me after my takes. And I was so nervous because I was like, well, why isn't he saying anything? Why isn't he, am I doing it right? And the woman who's playing my mother said, don't worry, if they don't say anything, you're doing it right. If they come up to you and say something, then there's something deeper that they want, or something more. But it was so much fun and so wild and such a cool entree into the business, I suppose.
A little French.
Oh yeah, I know. She's being classy. Okay.
Classy.
What was your character?
Man, it was a while ago. I was a girl who was being bullied, and my character had taken a picture of herself in a bra to send to her boyfriend. And then the boyfriend gave the picture to the mean girl in school, who then plastered it everywhere. And everyone was like really just being horrible to my character. And so my mother had taken me into the Drop Dead Diva's office because she was a lawyer and wanted to pursue legal action against the school bully. And my character was terrified to do that, but eventually realized that she was going to continue to bully more and more and more girls. And if I didn't stand up, then I was letting her get away with it and perpetuating that kind of behavior.
Cool. So how did you feel the first day?
So nervous. I had never been on a real set before. And I remember finding out like what blocking was and blocking for marks, because I didn't know.
Did you hit your marks?
No, not at all. I remember them having to like redo my take over and over because I kept stopping too soon or stopping too late. And they're like, darling, you have to hit this mark. But I was just bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, like, the lights, the camera, there's extras. There is somebody who's going to be sitting in to take my place while they do while they light everything. There's a second unit. It was so much fun. And yeah, the fact that I was also not in my hometown, that I was flown someplace else, staying in a hotel, was mind-blowing, absolutely mind-blowing.
So I guess the question I will ask for both of you, and either one of you can pick it, which is, what is the best job or episode that you have ever done?
Oh, God. It's hard.
That is hard.
Well, I know working with me was like part of it, but.
Number one pick, anything with Tony McKay. Number two pick, anything with Tony McKay.
Well, I definitely, Tanya, you and I, we worked together on an episode of Blue Bloods.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was season 5, episode 18 or something like that. Bad Company.
Yeah. Written by Brian Goluboff.
Yes. Such a well-written episode.
Yeah.
And that episode in particular really stands out to me because I feel like you helped me reach one of the highest levels I've ever reached in as myself as an actress. I watching that footage back, I don't recognize myself. It was the both of you like write such intense, you bring such intense material to the table and really challenging for an actor and for an audience as well. Like your episode of Criminal Minds. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, the episode title was?
Hostage.
Yeah. Hostage, yeah. But the episode that you directed me in for Blue Bloods was one of the ones that really stick out to me the most because it was such a challenge. And because I remember one of the things you kept saying to me was like, hold it in. Don't let him see anything. Don't let him see or hurt. And even my character was going through, like she was addressing the man who had killed her entire family.
When she was like 10.
10 years old. And so she was coming back to see him and to be face to face. And like all of my instincts were to just absolutely break down. And you kept telling me, don't do it, don't do it. And that created such an, like watching it back, it was mesmerizing and such a powerful choice because if I had just let it all come up and boil out, then it wouldn't have had that same effect at all. And that was definitely some of the most powerful work that I'm proud of when I look back on my body of work.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things, and I think Virgil and I both will agree, we even said it when I was directing my episode of Criminal Minds just recently with Virgil, is that I think you're a breakout star. I mean, I think when you get your show or your movie or your whatever, you're not going to talk to us anymore.
Are you kidding?
But
yes, you know, all about connections. It's all about connections.
No, I'm just kidding.
But I'd be like, girl, you better talk to me.
You are good, but you have such an ability to drop into the characters that you play. In Hostage, I watched it and I tweeted actually, and Bethany Rooney directed that episode. Oh. Who Bethany's amazing.
She's such a great director.
But just the places that you stick yourself in are the most amazing thing to watch. Because it's one thing to be able to say to you as a director, hold it in, because I don't have to make you go there. You know, it's easy for me to say to you, hold it in, because I see it. Mm-hmm. And I know that the reaction that you had on that episode would be the reaction that we got. And the fact that you are able to, like, I need you to explain to me how you do that, because I don't understand. I don't understand how an actor can be that vulnerable over and over and over. And I know you get burnt out and there's, you know, there's certain things like you, when you're doing an emotional scene, you film the person that's doing the emotion first because they'll burn out.
Yeah.
But the fact that you can show that amount of pain and suffering for the camera just is mesmerizing for me.
It's a gift.
It's a gift.
Yeah.
Thank you. But it's, and also like for Virgil, for writing that episode, like I told him before we did this, I go, it was like Room on crack.
I know.
I mean, it was the movie Room this year was amazing. So it was an amazing, but if you watch that Criminal Minds, it took it to a whole nother level.
Totally.
And like I had said to Virgil, how was that writing that episode? And I remember you said to me, it was really hard. It was
terrible.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
I remember the first time I read it before I auditioned, I had such a hard time reading it because it was just hitting such a strong chord in me. Like, it was a visceral reaction that I was having reading the script, because, I mean, the fact that that's based on a true story is so disgusting. Yeah. If you don't know, if you haven't seen the episode, it's based loosely on the Ariel Castro kidnappings in Ohio, where he kidnapped three women and held them for over 10 years in a house where nobody knew. Yeah. And
they had children.
One of them had a child. It's a disgusting, horrible story, but it's true. And the things that is even more disturbing is that kind of stuff is happening probably right now. I know,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? All over the world. So it was really hard to go there. Really hard to go there.
It was great to watch her too come out of, because the bulk of her really heavy stuff took place in one room. It was that hospital room.
Yeah.
And you know, she'd come out after a take and she'd be vibrating. She'd literally be, there'd be, you know, she'd be doing this. And, she, you know, you could see in her eyes that she'd shut it off, that she'd, you know, she'd clicked out and come out of whatever space that was. But the residue, it was cool. It was cool for me to see that. It was cool, you know, and cool the way that, you know, you throw a really deep pass, you know, to make a sports analogy, and then someone makes a great catch. It's like, that was cool. And a gift. I mean, that, you know, I mean, there's stuff, you know, you're one of those actors that, well, A, I'm not worried about you. B, like, the stuff that you do can, I think, be learned, perhaps, over time with experience, with exploration and such. But I don't know that you can teach it. Like, I don't know that you could, you know, offer a class. It's instinct. You made choices in your read, and you made choices on the day.
Yeah.
And that day, that first day, when that director didn't have anything for you, that meant that, you know, I guess when I'm watching an actor, it's for me, it's like, it's two things. It's about choices. What choices do you make? Yeah. Especially if they're auditioning like stuff that I've written, you know, that I kind of know what I'm looking for, neighborhood I'm in. But if it's not mine, and even if it is mine, it's about false moments. We were talking about that a little bit beforehand. Yeah. And there's so many false moments because you're acting, you know what I mean? And even the really good ones, sometimes you have to, most times you dig out pieces of takes and you know, there's a construction that goes on, but this one, you know, was just like,
oh God,
it was really, you know, and every once in a while you get someone that can do that, you know, and it's, then it takes off. Then it achieves, a certain kind of, it comes to life in a way, it's past you, you know what I mean? Like, as the writer, it's like, I've done my work and I've sort of sent it off into the sky.
Well, the cool thing about how you wrote that episode is what I particularly loved about Violet as the character was that she thought this was good, and she loved her captor because that was the only thing that she knew. Mm. And that scene where I asked to say goodbye to him and hug him, when I first read that, I got such crazy chills because it's so against what you as a reader, your instincts are. Your instincts are, oh, get away from him. Go as far away. But all she wanted to do was go in and hug him and embrace him. And I mean,
well, and she also wanted to see her kids too.
Yeah.
There was that, which I thought it was really interesting, Virgil, and I don't know if this is part of the true story or not, but how she kept referring to them as her sisters, not her children.
Yeah.
Which, you know, as a viewer, just for me watching it, it's like, how do you go through birth and think that that's your, like, that's how messed up that is.
Yeah.
It's like, here's a child who has been taken at such a young age that they don't know anything about
anything.
Sex or birth or, you know, because how old was she? She was eight.
I think when she was eight, yeah.
Yeah, and then for her to have this whole other reality that you would think was crazy, because we all know, you know, what it is. And so to watch that character, and I always find it fascinating, one, to watch an actor, you know, perform that, but then also a writer to write that. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's like the scripts that I've done for you, Virgil, and it's only been two.
Yeah.
It seems like it's been a million because we're on the same page all the time and we're in each other's minds. But But it's amazing to me how you're able to get that out on a page. Like, you know, I read those scripts and it's like, wow, you know, you can see the vulnerability in it, you know, and that's, I think, one of the reasons I love Criminal Minds is because it's not about the carnage and the violence. It's about the psychology of why people do what they do to each other. You know, but how do you, we talked about this a little bit when we were in prep, and I think it's interesting because I was saying to you how I was talking to my father, who is a writer, and talking about his process and how he sees things like moving his head, but how other writers, he was telling me Stephen Bochco basically hears everything. And I had asked you, what is your process? Like, what is it that you do? And your answer was...
I forgot.
Your answer was that you hear it and you see it. The voices, it's not all just one voice, right?
You know, I think it depends on, you know, at what point you're sort of picking it up in the process too. And I think it also depends on, you know, what I'm writing. If it's a Criminal Minds episode, you know, 9 times out of 10, all the stuff that I do is born of character. It's always born of the voices. It's some derivative of a voice that's been banked in my head already. You know, if not the voice itself. You know, someone I've encountered, listened to, met, read about, whatever that may be. Even subconsciously, there I think that, you know, I'm on sort of auto bank all the time. So it always starts at character. You know, and sometimes you can't start at character. Sometimes, for instance, this last episode that you and I did together came from, okay, we're going to bring Prentice back to Criminal Minds and we need to do something cool. And then you sort of go into the think tank and go, okay, what can we sort of build? You know, you go into the lab and create. But most of the instinct stuff, the episodes that really kind of, sing in a particular way, or hit or resonate in it, that's probably a better word, resonate in a particular way, like Hostage, I think really sort of resonated on the Criminal Minds scale. You know, they're not false, they're not contrived, even though we're writing, you know, network television for CBS. You sort of mitigate as much of the contrivance as you can and have it come from a real genuine place and deal with real human emotions. And then, you know, you try and put your characters in situations that are dramatic, like her saying goodbye to that man and our guys sort of having to allow her to hug him to get what they wanted. I mean, that is a very, that's not like a big thing. That's not an explosion. It's not a car chase. It's not a, but that little filament in that scene makes it work. And it gives her, the actor, and honestly, the director, something to, I don't know, cling to, you know, how they make sort of false coral. They can build false coral and this coral sort of grows on it. It's like that, you know, and something off of which to, I don't know, catch your vibration, you know, so to speak. So it really does, you know, it varies, but it comes from there. I mean, it character and sort of what you need and how fast you need it, because it's, you know, TV's also a race. It's not... You know, it's also a sort of a time trial. It's
how long do you usually have to write an episode?
Great question. So we, you know, our room at Criminal Minds has been together for a long time. So we can break our stories in about a day.
Whoa.
Yeah, we can do it really fast. If we have, you know, the sort of tent poles in place, if you know who your unsub is and you are sort of familiar enough with his or her why, which is what makes Criminal Minds go. So we can break the story in about a day. Then,
When you say break, you mean like...
We put it on the board. So it's a scene by scene. There's a little, you know, a few sentences per scene. Mm-hmm. All up on the board. So you can see the whole thing like we were talking about. Mm-hmm. Then you have a week to go off and write the outline. You kind of disappear and go off and write the outline. And then you sit down in the room and every writer in the room gives you notes. And then you have 2 weeks to write the script. And then you sit down at the table again and every writer in the room gives you notes. And then you have a week to write the revised, and then you sit down at the table again, and every writer gives you notes. and then by that point, you're fast approaching prep, you know, which is that time trial element of it all. You know, if you're episode 14, the middle of 22, you know, we're moving. Like, this is what we're doing. Like, we're going. We're, you know, we got to break the story. We got to do this. We got to do that. And you're sometimes making changes. Oftentimes television, you're making changes. And you guys know this. It's production stuff that happens on the day.
Oh, we had a lot of changes on our last schedule. Like,
I mean, yeah. All kinds of things affect your choices. So there's this sort of purity that you have. You know, one of my favorite quotes is 85% of the television business is disappointment. The other 15% is hiatus. R. Scott Gemmell.
I think you said that to me quite a few times.
Because you have this, well, you have this pure idea of what you want to do. Yeah. And, you know, if you had time, if we were in a feature shoot, you know, we have a day to shoot two pages. You know, you could really romance this thing. We joked about romancing stuff because you don't have time. It's a freaking race.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's part of the game in TV.
It's so crazy that an episode is shot in eight days.
Yeah. But it's not even 8 days anymore. It's 7 days.
Hostage was seven.
Yeah, sometimes it's 7 days on cable shows. It's been my experience, 7 days and 11 hours. Because normally a work day is 12 hours. And now they're, for budgetary reasons, saying 11 or even 10. You know, I think the most page count that I've done, and like normally if you're on a 12-hour day, you could probably do, if it wasn't ER, but if you were, you could probably do, you know, nine and a half pages in 12 hours.
Yeah.
I've done 9 3/8 pages in 11 and a half hours with, you know, not just two actors, with like 5-6 actors in a scene.
Yeah.
And you know, it. And I always say, especially too, when people want to get into the business, especially as a director, they've made the bar so high that you can't get in if you're just starting out, because you can't do that. Like, you don't, it's not that you're not a good director and that you don't have the talent. It has nothing to do with that. It's like you're going to make mistakes, just like all of us do when we start out doing any of our careers. You make mistakes and it's like there's no room for mistakes anymore.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, and I always say, you know, what's happening now is you've got your directors that are directing an episodic all the time, and you're not really feeding new directors in.
Mm-hmm.
So what's going to happen is everybody's going to get older, retire, and you're not going to have these directors because, yeah, I can do, you know, I've actually stood up and said on shows when they've asked me to do it in 10 hours instead of 11, and I'm like, I'm not going to do it because it's not fair to the person coming up behind me, whether I'm able to do it or not.
Yeah.
It's like, if I do it, and I always sit there and I say, you've heard me say, it's like you give a mouse a cookie, he's going to want a glass of milk. It's like, in our industry, we are so good at accomplishing the goal, you know, especially in TV. It's like, you know, we want to crash a car, but don't really crash it because we don't want to spend the money to crash it. And then somebody's able to figure out how to do it. And they're like, well, the guy before you did that. So you should do that. You should do it, because then that becomes the new normal.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing about TV is the directors, you're coming in for one episode or sometimes two episodes, but it's you're like coming into a machine that's already moving, and then you jump at the head of it. And that's just such a crazy idea to me, to be able to jump at the steering wheel of a ship that's moving. And
you're the substitute teacher. Remember in school when you got the substitute teacher, and either you liked your substitute teacher or you hated your substitute teacher. And actually, you know, a director friend of mine who, I'm not going to say her name because she might get mad at me for saying that she said it, but that was her analogy. And I thought, oh my gosh, that's so perfect because that's what it is. And it's like, so again, being a director, it has nothing to do with your skill. It has to do with your way of dealing with people and your personality skills. And you know, if you, I mean, think of how many, I mean, you guys have both worked enough in the business to know, think of how many directors that you didn't get along with.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't have anything to do with the fact that that director was a bad director. It just happened that they didn't fit into the family system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very true. It's a team sport. Television is. I mean, I'm sure movies are too in their own regard. But TV's team. It's, you know, there's a writing team and there's, you know, different positions, and it's really fully, at its best, it's collaborative.
Yeah, and everybody has to come super prepared and ready to do their work because there's no time to rehearse or play it out. You have to just come in and do it. You're ready.
Yeah, and it goes better when your prop guy's like read the script.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he's not sort of like
looking at
the call sheet and seeing what he needs to show up with. He actually knows, you know, why there's a 44 Bulldog revolver in the story.
Right.
As opposed to just showing up with a 44 Bulldog revolver, because that's what he needed. He knows that, and we used that in our last episode. You know, he knows that this guy has that particular gun because he's copying somebody. And that helps. That cumulative effort, you know, shows up on the screen. I'm positive of that effect, of that sort of, you know.
Well, it also feeds the energy. Yeah. Like, if everybody is on the same page, you can feel it you walk on set. It's electric.
Yeah.
If nobody cares, you can feel that too.
Yeah.
You're like, I don't really want to be here, because nobody else does either. Yeah,
for sure.
Energy's
flagging, people trying to go home. You know, dude's tired of laying cables. Like, you know, I'm just trying to get back to my kids.
Yeah.
That's real.
No, it's true. And for me, I think my biggest, you both will tell anybody that I'm the biggest goof, you know, but it's
it does.
Because
really does.
It's one of those things where if I can keep everybody laughing all day, it shows in the work.
Yeah.
Like, everybody's happy and everybody's pulling that rock up the hill together. And I think one of the biggest problems for television is the fact that features and TV are completely different in terms of in features, the director is king.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in television, the writer is king.
Yeah.
And I honestly think that, you know, you always have the writers and the directors pitting up against each other, which is stupid.
Yep.
Because we both are going for the same goal.
Yep.
And nobody should be have full credit of, of the project. But if you have a writer and a director who work really well together, then you can make magic. And then you bring the actors in who then have almost unified front of mom and dad working together, and they come in and they get supported to get the best performances that they can give. Because I always feel like if your actor does not feel safe, they are not going to give you that gem, that really gold piece, like what you were saying with Blue Bloods. You know, it's like, and tell me if I'm wrong, but if you don't feel protected, you can't go there.
Also, yeah, definitely. And also because you're not quite sure where you're going, what direction you're going. Like, if I feel like a director doesn't necessarily, like, they're focused on other things, then I feel like I'm kind of shooting out in the dark, or like, this is my idea. But if I really feel like the director and the writer, we're all on the same page, then I know we all know where we're going collectively together. And then I can relax more into that and really settle into that. But otherwise, there's always that constant second guessing. Like, am I making the right choice? Is this good? Is this good? Are you sure? We're moving on? Okay. All right. I guess that was all right, you know. But if we're all there together, then I know, like, this is the direction we're going. And I feel good when we move on.
Right. Yeah. Right. So, Amelia, I have a question for you, which I'm sure people would love to hear about. How was it being on True Blood?
Ha So much fun. So much fun. So we talk about how you shoot an episode of television in 7 to 8 days.
Not them.
No. True Blood, we shot an episode in about 21 days. So it was like shooting 10 mini movies. It was unbelievable. And I had been a fan of the show since season one. So to get cast in season six, I got to work with my favorite characters on the show. I was starstruck. I couldn't believe where I was. I couldn't believe I was in Fantasia, talking to Eric with Pam, Sookie. It was incredible. It was so much fun. And to then be turned into a vampire, I couldn't. I still have my teeth. I put them in when I'm feeling down and I need to boost my self-confidence. I flick my teeth in. Yeah. I'm like, I can control anything. I can do anything.
So you were on the last two.
I was on the last two.
And your character was?
I played Willa Burrell, and I was the governor of Louisiana's daughter. And he was, the governor was played by Arliss Howard, who's an incredible, incredible actor. And he was very anti-vampire. And my character, Willa, got kidnapped by Eric, who was played by Alexander Skarsgård, and then turned into a vampire and sent back to my father. So it was a meaty, meaty, really fun role. And I think I'm one of the only girls to ever be on True Blood who did not have to take her clothes off. So that is something that it was a lot of fun.
So speaking of that, since you brought it up, what's your feeling about that? Like, if you got a part where they wanted you to take your clothes off?
I would if it moved the story forward, sure. if it was an integral part, if it was necessary for the character to move her forward. If it was gratuitous and I'm taking my clothes off just because they need boobs, no, I don't want to do that. Because, I mean, in my idea, like the quintessential scene requiring nudity is in Boys Don't Cry with Hilary Swank. Like she, you needed to see that. It had to happen in order to move the story forward. But yeah, if it's just for titillation,
so young.
No.
I still cry. I went to like Fame. I went to Coco. Remember Coco? Oh,
I totally remember
I love
Coco.
Boys Don't Cry. That's one of my ultimate favorite movies. So
but do you
good.
Remember Fame?
Do you remember Fame?
No, I mean, I do remember
Irene
it.
Kara had to, her top, she did lower her top. She's on video. She's going on
she
a
cried.
Audition.
Oh. We're showing our age, Virgil.
Yeah, I know.
No,
old.
No, no. I had a I'm few old. Friends who went to the Fame school in New York.
I remember Fame. My mom loved that movie.
Well, it's so funny because Amelia and I are friends, but every once in a while I'm like,
I'm old.
I feel like once you get past like, what, like 21, 22,
oh,
like,
we're all
age
same.
Doesn't really we're all matter same. At all. You know, it's like, it's just about wisdom and experience.
God bless you, child.
So, Virgil, tell us how it was working on ER.
Awesome. I mean, you know, it's John Wells. So ER for me was, you know, the way that high school informs your life, you know, ER and that 4-year run on ER sort of, I think, will inform my career in much the same way. As I sort of figured out, I made big mistakes and John Wells allowed me to do that and sort of recognized in me and sort of affirmed in me, like, you know, that you belong here, you know, don't fuck up anymore. You know what I mean? Don't do that. Don't do this. Don't do this. Do that. It was actually 5 years because I was on a show, canceled show called Johnny Zero, which was a John Wells show. So I got 5 years in that system, you know, and to do the sports analogy thing again, you know, if you're a football fan, specifically the San Francisco 49ers, you know, you got Bill Walsh who created the West Coast offense. Mm-hmm. And there were a ton of coaches that came from that school and that, you know, won championships and run versions of that offense. And he sort of grandfathered this whole system. And Wells is like that. Wells is one of those guys that created a system. And it was fantastic. I mean, I was starstruck too. Because I was a fan of the show before I got on the show. And it was one of those shows that made you go like, wow, like God, TV's freaking killer. Mm. You know, what they're doing, you know, on TV. Because ER changed. It was one of those shows that changed things a little bit. And it was an incredible, incredible, incredible learning experience. It was tough. But the best thing ever. You know, I'll cherish. Like, when plus the Warner Brothers lot. I don't know if you've ever been in the Warner Brothers lot. That's the best lot. It's the best lot in town.
Such good energy. Yeah.
It was so great. Well, when I worked on ER, it was just, I just remember Christopher Chulak saying to me, you know, I went to him and I'm like, well, you know, I have the shot and I want to try and do this. And he's like, try it.
Yeah.
He's like, if you don't get it, he's like, we'll come back.
Yeah.
You know, it was, and what I loved about that show was that everybody was appreciated for the talent that they brought to the table.
Yep.
There was, so each episode was kind of considered its own movie. Uh-huh. I mean, it was like, they never told you couldn't do this or you couldn't do that or, you know, and so there was an extreme freedom of creativity there.
And character. I mean, you know, you look at a show on Criminal Minds, you're very limited. It's very limiting, you know. The emotion's very limiting. It's, you know, it's very high-pitched, high-velocity emotion. Like, oh my God, I can't believe my daughter's missing. Or, oh my God, I can't believe my daughter's dead. Or, oh my God, I can't believe you found my daughter. Like, there's very, you know, but on ER, you know, you could have 3, 4, 5 stories running at the same time. Mm. I could walk anybody into the hospital. You didn't have to get heavy. You didn't have to get too self-serious. You didn't have to get too dangerous, but you could and did. And I could make you laugh in one scene and then make you cry in the next. And it was just, it was incredibly liberating to be able to create in that kind of space. Yeah. It was a wonderful, like, I can't imagine, like, the sort of, it's the canvas that you have to go off And it was a formulaic show. I mean, you know, the dude's going to come in or lady's going to come in and they're going to be sick, you know, and then they're going to get sicker, you know, and then they're either going to die or they're going to make it. And then something, you know, beautiful will resonate with the doctors that are trying to help them. And it was just...
But you also had the stories with the main characters that didn't have anything to do with the hospital.
Yep.
So you didn't always have to have, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, I think one of the favorite episodes I did was a naked dream. Parminder went through, you know, had a naked dream in the ER, which, you know, you would think that would be easy to shoot. But if you look at ER and the way ER was shot, which was all these...
Wonders.
Amazing wonders, but I got to hide somebody's nakedness, you know, and I think I did
awesome.
Thanks. It was, but it was also, I think it was like season, how many seasons did ER go?
That was season 12, I think. That was like the last season.
It was the last season. And
no, I'm sorry. I got there season 12. That was season 15.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
So I did that episode and I thought when I got it, I thought, this is just so amazing because you don't get handed something like this, you know? And Parminder was like, oh my God, I'm so glad it's you because you're a woman, you know, because it's like she had to walk around in a bandeau and I mean, it was like literally she walked around with charts in front of her chest, you know, hiding herself, and she had to go all the way out into the ambulance bay.
Yeah.
Oh my
God. And I had her have, you know, I had to give her stuff to like try and hide her. And then what was cool about that show and Criminal Minds does this too, which I was allowed to create things. Like I said, well, if it's a dream, why don't we start to think that it's a dream? So I had like an old 1920, you know, ambulance and these guys carrying this guy. And that was all the stuff that I came up with where I'm like, well, once we start to realize it's a dream, why don't we just let it go for it?
Yeah, let it fly.
And quite frankly, the episode that we just did, we did the same. We did some of the same. We had some dream stuff in there, and we did some of the same things and trying to create that stuff. And I always think it's so fun when you get to sit there with your writer and just sit there and like come up with ideas and bounce off each other, and it's just so much fun.
It's interesting because tone meetings with your director on ER could last. I remember I sat in tone with Terrence Nightingale. We spent an afternoon over like cheese and wine, like because you could spend hours toning the episode, sort of digging out, you know, the nuance and the looks that you wanted to grab and things that the sort of subtleties that you know eventually make the whole episode what it is. Criminal Minds is a lot different. It's just, there's not the same kind of, it's just a space thing. There's not the same kind of spaces in there where you resonate because like you mentioned being able to go home with the characters on ER and sometimes they had nothing to do with the stories, but when ER was at its best, somehow, some way, in some shape or form, even if it was sort of some sort of tangent relation, whatever was happening with the patients resonated somehow with the characters, main characters' lives. Yeah. Even if it was, you know, on the nose, you know, more teenagers, Abby Lockhart's pregnant, then what do we do for her? We're going to run a bunch of characters at her. We're going to run a foster kid at her who's been put up for adoption. We're going to run a teenage mother at her. We're going to run a mom at her who's got six kids. We're going to run someone who, you know, is a drug addict and wants to abort the baby. Like, we're going to throw that stuff at her. And she has to sort of, you know, look at herself. And when I think when ER was at its best, you know, we were able to push the buttons in the main characters using the patients that came in.
No, I think that's true. I mean, the very first episode I did was when Dr. Weaver's girlfriend died.
Yeah,
you know, and then it became about the family taking their child because they had a gay relationship.
Yeah,
and I remember it being about showing anybody who watched that episode, making them feel what it would feel like if you lost your child.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if what your sexual orientation is. It matters that this person who just lost the person that they love is now losing their child because the family, you know, has some sort of bias.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what made that episode so impactful and meaningful. It was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I do think though that Criminal Minds does do that in a way.
From
but
time
it
just, to time. It's hard to do because of the high pitched.
Yeah, because you always have to have the unsub.
Yeah, because the unsub, and I don't care what's going on in your life. I don't care if your dog died, you know, you're in remission for your cancer and, you know, you're trying to kick smoking. If a serial killer shows up, like, that's what you're dealing with. Mm. That's it. Like, that doesn't, like, that trumps everything. It trumps all, you know, if you're dealing, you know, if your kid's been kidnapped, you know, that's what you're dealing with.
Right.
You know, the cancer takes a back seat until your kid comes home.
Until you figure that thing out.
Yeah.
So when does your episode of Criminal Minds air, the one that you two did together?
I know. I think it's the 30th of March.
30th of March?
I think it's the 30th of March.
Nice.
I think it's the end of the month.
All right.
So what, and tell me, I think I asked you this question again. If I didn't, I'll have to think of another one. but what was the hardest, Amelia, what was the hardest part you ever had to play? Like, what was the part where you went in, you got the audition, but then you actually got the part and you went, oh my God, I don't know how to do this.
You know, honestly, it was this Criminal Minds episode.
Really?
Yeah. I had a really hard time stepping into Violet because I had such an intense visceral reaction to it. It terrified me. I was absolutely terrified. I remember when I found out that I had booked the job, my first reaction was, fuck.
Yeah, now what?
Oh my God, I don't know if I can do this because I had such a hard time even reading through the scenes because I would feel so much. It was like hitting this part of me that I just didn't want to look at. I didn't want to go there. And then I had to. And so then when I got the job, I knew that I had to be able to let it go after it cut and I took off my costume and I went home, because something that's hard for me to do is let it go, because especially when you're working on something that is so emotional and so intense and you have such a strong, it resonates so intensely, it's hard to let that go. And then the entire experience in between, like the days, it's there living with you. So when I told myself when I booked this, I was like, I have to be able to let this go in between, because otherwise I'm gonna drive myself insane, because this place is so dark. So I watched, I binged watch Jessica Jones, because I needed to watch some women beat some ass and just really take it out, because I didn't know how I was going to do that. And I also didn't do, because usually I do a lot of like analysis and breaking down of the scenes, and I spend a lot of time kind of going through the different beats. With this one, I didn't really touch it, because I could just feel that it was there. And so when I would go on set, I'd have no idea what was going to come out. But it was also trusting that because I was having such a strong reaction to it, that I would be able to go there and I wouldn't have to push it. And it would just fall in. And I think in a way it did. I think I did a pretty good job of letting it go in between. But that was one of the hardest ones because of the subject matter. And I remember when I was going in to do ADR, they're like, did you have fun doing this episode? And I was like,
she's like, no,
I wouldn't call it fun.
I'm gonna kill Virgil.
No, but I mean, I'm so grateful for the opportunity, because it terrified me. And one thing that I always want to challenge myself to do is to go to the places that scare me.
Yeah, no doubt.
And do you think through that experience you've found a better way to work or a different way to work, instead of, because I know for me, like, early in my career, I would meticulously, you know, go through my scripts, and you know, now it's like I know what I'm going to do, but I leave myself open for what can happen. And do you feel like this part helped you grow?
Definitely. I couldn't have done this role like a year ago. I would have driven myself insane. It would have been torturing. Like I would have tortured myself. So I was able to teach myself, or the lesson that I wanted to learn was to be able to let myself off the hook and to not feel like I have to take it home with me in order to make sure that I still have the pulse on it. Because something, especially with more emotional material, you're really, what the fear is to not be able to find it when you have to, when the cameras are on you and they're saying action, to not be able to tap into that. So you always want to, the instinct for that I have is to constantly be massaging it and making sure it's still there and it's still alive. But with this one, I really was able to learn how to completely let it go and just trust that all of that is boiling deep beneath me. And I don't have to keep dipping down into it to check that it's still on, because it's on.
It just amazes. It's like, Virgil, don't you think, just like listening to her talk, it's like, I wouldn't know how to let it go. Not in the way that you do. Like, I do it in my craft, and I'm sure you do it in your craft, but it's very protected. It's like a very protected craft. I don't have to sit there, and I don't have someone yelling action at me and me having to perform. And it just, and I've acted before, but it's like, I just don't understand how you can go to that place over and over. Like, how do you do that without being completely numb?
It's hard. It's really hard. I honestly, I couldn't pick out one thing that like a trick or something to be able to do it. You just literally have to go in again and again and finding something new. Images, having very specific images in my head, those really resonate with me. I'm a very visual person. So if I'm going into a scene, if I have very strong images, then I can bring them up in my mind throughout the scene, and that will trigger an emotion. But also just not trying to grasp onto it, which seems very counterintuitive. But I don't know. I don't know how to do it over and over. I mean, it's about finding something new every time and going in it from a slightly different way, so you don't feel like you're just playing the same note over and over. You have to find the little things that are different so that you're engaged with the other person. You're in it with them. You're locked into them. You're not just, am I doing this? Is this the right emotion? Is this the right note I'm supposed to hit? If you're locked in with the other person and what you're trying to do with them, it makes it much easier because it gets your focus off yourself.
And we have like 4 minutes left, but Virgil, I want to ask you, the same question. Like, what was the script that you had to write where you were like, oh my God, I don't know if I can actually write this.
I don't know that that's ever happened. It's more about it, you know, especially in Criminal Minds, because the subject matter can be so difficult and the research process that leads into the actual writing can be so like, geez Louise, you know, the depravity that you have to sort of read about and, you know, sort of reckon with, you know, the ability of people to be so cruel to other people. I think it's been more about a sort of fear of being in a particular space for any particular period of time. Because, you know, I've had to tell my wife, and she knows if she walks in the room and I'm writing and I'm in tears, she knows I'm just there. Like, she knows I'm good. Everything's good. I'm just like sort of in it. Because when I'm writing, I don't know. I can't speak to anybody else's process. You know, I didn't go to school. I mean, I got rejected from the SC Film School. Like, everything I do comes from, like, whether I believe it or not. So I try and write shit that I actually believe. You know, and you get a feeling. You get that tingle. You get that. You get that. There's a crackle that happens.
The hum.
Yeah, when you believe a moment, like, you know, and it doesn't come when you don't believe it. So, I think this last one, you know, this one that we did with Amelia Hostage, just because the subject matter. We don't drop any bodies. There's no violence. Well, there's like some tussle in the hospital room when she comes after him, and but there's not, and there's a shooting, gets shot at the end, but there's no, we're not crashing cars or
it's emotional.
Yeah.
Violence.
It's all emotion. It's all in the unsaid. It's all what's happening sort of after what's happening after we leave the scene or what's happened just before that scene started, you know? And it was about sort of finding those little splices, where you could tell the story and get the profiling out. But that was tough because I have kids, you know, and, you know, that was, I mean, that's why part of the reason, like, in those scenes, there's no, like, when she finally meets her parents, there's not a lot, like, they don't really exchange.
No.
Because what the fuck do you say? You know what I mean? And in a scene that's not going to be less than 8-9 pages long, you know, on a network TV show.
Yeah.
So it's more about that. It's more about sort of like, oh God, I'm going to have to be in this space, this emotional space for a period of time. And I'm going to have to like shut it off and drink a beer and play a video game.
Yeah.
And go hug
my
kids.
Totally.
You know, well, like, I mean, I think that's what we all have in common. I mean, the last thing, you know, since we got to wrap it up, but that's where I, cause you laugh at me all the time. Cause when we get in a scene and it's like an emotional scene, I start to not be able to breathe, you know, and he goes, oh, I know we got
Johnny
it.
Tanya likes it.
Tanya likes it. Cause it took me to an emotional space, but I want to thank the two of you for coming. I think that this, for me, you know, I hope our listeners will be as enlightened as I was, but I could sit here for another hour, you know, asking you guys questions because I'm just fascinated. You know, I know all about what I do as my job, but as writer or as an actor, it's like always fascinating to me how you guys work and how you do your craft and your creativity. So I just
likewise.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway. Are we done?
Boop, boop, boop.
Come on, people. It's time to live it up.